Okay, so good morning and welcome back. I hope you're all feeling well rested and ready for another day of Brahmavihara adventures. And if you're not feeling well rested, I hope that you can meet whatever your experience is right now with this attitude of basic kindness. Because in that way, nothing is a problem. There's no experience that we need to struggle with. And there's no such thing as a distraction. All of it is practice. Whatever presents itself is an opportunity to practice mindfulness and kindness. Because as His Holiness the Dalai Lama famously said, be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. So I find that a really useful reminder as we continue to explore the Brahmavihara practices that I gave an overview of last night. And this morning I'd like to come back to the first one, metta, which, as you know, in this tradition is seen as the foundation that the other three develop from. So in this session now I'll be giving a bit more context about how metta is generally practiced before we move into a couple of different guided meditations. So traditionally we begin this training with metta so that from that base of kindness the other three qualities can develop. And metta is a Pali word that's usually translated into English as loving kindness. But as some scholars and teachers have pointed out, that isn't such an accurate translation and in some ways not so helpful because in English, to some ears, it can sound a little bit sentimental or wishy-washy. And the loving part of loving kindness can be confusing. Because in English, the word love has such a wide range of different meanings. So we talk about loving ice cream or loving pizza, for example. And it's often used in terms of romantic love. So the kind of love that we hear about in music and in movies, read about in magazines and novels. And that kind of love is often very exclusive. It's usually reserved just for one person. It's often very emotional. It's unstable. Often it doesn't last. So in many ways, it's actually the opposite of the kind of love that we're trying to cultivate as metta. So metta, as we know, is ultimately cultivated to the point where it's unconditional, offered equally to all beings. So instead of referring to it as loving kindness, some people leave out the loving part and translate it simply as kindness. Kindness, goodwill, friendliness. Because the Pali word metta comes from the same root as the word for friendliness, which is maitri. So hopefully thinking of metta as friendliness might make it a bit more accessible. And in fact, in some of the discourses, metta is simply defined as non-ill will, which makes it even more accessible, hopefully. Perhaps we struggle to imagine unconditional loving kindness, but maybe non-ill will is a bit more doable. And remembering that this is a quality that can be cultivated, can be strengthened. So how do we actually do that? So although the Buddha did stress the importance of metta through all of his teachings, there's really only one sutta from the time of the Buddha that gives actual instructions on how to do it. And in that sutta or discourse, we're asked to simply abide with our hearts imbued with metta. Then spread this kindness outwards to the north, the south, the east, the west, then above, below, and all around to cover the entire world. So those are the basic instructions. And as you heard, it starts with the assumption that we're already abiding with our hearts imbued with kindness, which perhaps for many of us is a bit of a stretch. Bit like starting the car engine in fourth gear. So most people need help to get to that first stage of being able to abide with one's heart imbued with metta. So after the Buddha's lifetime, specific techniques were developed using words and phrases to generate metta. And these are what I call the reciting phrases method of metta practice, which we'll be doing later on. And then later in the retreat, we'll experiment with some different approaches. So for now, I'd like to start with what's become the traditional method, the reciting phrases method. This is most commonly used by teachers in the Western Insight tradition, such as Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Tara Brach, and so on. So I think all of you here already are familiar with it. It's where we bring to mind a sequence of different people, and then for each person, recite the same phrases of well-wishing for them. So for all these techniques, there are strengths and drawbacks. With the reciting phrases method, the words can help remind us of the states that we're aiming for. They can keep the attention focused. And because we're working with actual people, it can feel a bit more real. The disadvantage of this method, though, is that words are very subjective. So words that work for one person might be meaningless or maybe off-putting for someone else. So when I give the guided meditation soon, I'll be using phrases that are pretty generalized. But if you already have a set of phrases that work for you, then feel free to continue working with them. And if you don't have a standard set of phrases yet, then this weekend you might start experimenting to find some. You might try out a few different sets and see if you can find some language that does resonate for you. So as a starting point in the Visuddhimagga, which is the classical text that this method comes from, the phrases are, may I be happy and free from suffering. May I keep myself free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety, and live happily. Now, for myself, when I first looked at those phrases, I found that because of the mind's inherent negativity bias, which I think you all know is our tendency to pay much more attention to the unpleasant, the difficult, the painful, than to the pleasant, I found that when I use those phrases myself, that reference to suffering, to enmity, to affliction, to anxiety, my mind would sort of get hooked there, and it got in the way of trying to orient to the metta, the kindness. So I simplified the language, I took out the reference to the afflictive state, and came up with these phrases. May you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be happy, may you know peace. So whatever phrases you use, the idea is that they're short and simple, and they're universally applicable to everyone. Now, sometimes people say, well, can't I use different sets of phrases for different people? I have some that really work for my best friend. But it can be very tempting when we customize our phrases for preferences to creep in. So when we're working with a good friend, for example, we have these beautiful, poetic, flowery, loving language. And then by the time it gets to the difficult person, it becomes a little shorter, maybe even terse. Yeah, okay, may you be well, I suppose. May you be happy. May you not be hit by a bus. Okay, whatever. So there's ways that we can start to bring in our biases. And that's why we stick with the discipline of using the same phrases. So as you know, we can think of this as this progress of the practice as being the path of least resistance. So we start with where the metta comes most easily, most naturally. And then we progress to more neutral people, then more difficult people, and then eventually expanding to include all human beings and then all non-human beings, all animals, all living beings everywhere. And just to say that although the general idea is that we do progress from the easy to the difficult, there's no set time frame for this. So one common mistake people make is that they try to move too quickly from the good friend to the so-called difficult person. And then when that doesn't work, they get frustrated or judge themselves or the practice. So keep in mind that this is intended to be a gradual training. And at any point, if we find ourselves struggling with it, that's a sign that we might need to back up, to come back to where the metta does come more easily. Stay there for as long as is necessary, months, maybe even years. And then when there's more strength there, we can experiment with extending it to the difficult person. So one image or analogy that's sometimes used for this is the image of a waterfall. So if you think of a waterfall that's a series of rock basins descending down a cliff, you can imagine the river flows over the edge of the cliff and it just naturally fills the basin that's closest to the top of the cliff. And when that first basin is full, the water naturally spills over and fills the next basin below it. And then when that basin's full, it overflows, fills the next basin, and so on, very naturally and effortlessly, until all the basins are full and the water comes down to the deep pool at the bottom of the cliff. So that's just an analogy for this sense of the naturalness and the ease. We're not wanting to force this. So the general idea is we start where it comes most easily, and in the classical Visuddhimagga practice, that is with we ourselves. But as I think you all know, for many people these days, starting with ourself is not necessarily the easiest place to start. In fact, many people are their own worst enemies and really struggle to offer kindness to themselves. So this morning I'll be starting with the second category, which is the category which involves offering metta to a benefactor. So this term benefactor refers to anyone who might have helped you in some way, anyone you feel a sense of gratitude towards, or respect or appreciation. So it could be some kind of mentor, maybe a school teacher or a spiritual teacher. It could be somebody that you know pretty well, a family member, perhaps a grandparent or a kindly aunt or uncle. Or it could be a young person, a grandchild or a favorite niece or nephew. It could be someone you don't know personally at all, but for you in some way embodies this quality. So for some people, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, or perhaps someone like Pema Chodron, Thich Nhat Hanh. It doesn't even have to be a human being, so it could be a pet, or even a wild animal that you feel a connection to. It really doesn't matter who or what the benefactor is. It's more important that you just feel that natural spark of warmth or kindness or appreciation when you think of them. So that's who we'll be working with. And just to say, before we move into the actual practice, another common challenge for people is that they try too hard to make some kind of feeling happen. But the feeling is not the most important aspect of the practice. And in fact, if we're doing it to try and get some kind of feeling, then it's not unconditional. What is more important is that we're cultivating the intention to generate kindness. So it doesn't matter so much whether or not you get an emotion. And in fact, at least in my own experience, trying to make an emotion happen often gets in the way. So try to let go of any expectation or pressure that you should be feeling something. Because even if all you did was sit here in silence and every few minutes call up these phrases, called up the intention of kindness, whether you feel it or not, that is always time well spent. Even if it felt dry and mechanical, you're still planting seeds, the seeds of intentionality. And whether or not those seeds flower straight away doesn't matter. But unless we plant the seeds, we're not going to get any flowers. So you can think of this weekend, using that metaphor of gardening, as being like cultivating the soil, planting the seeds, and then just trusting that when the conditions are right, the seedlings will naturally emerge and grow. So I'll be offering perhaps a more classical guided metta meditation now, and we'll be working with the category of the benefactor. And even so, I like to begin by orienting first to our own well-being, because generally it's easier to offer well-wishing to others if we have some connection to our own sense of ease, well-being, perhaps happiness. So I'll take a few minutes at the beginning just to invite us into this experience of ease, of relaxing. And then just let the words sort of wash over you. And if they're not working for you, you can just let the words be in the background and just keep connecting to the heart center. Okay, so let's give that a try now.